Welcome to the Long-Term Investing Podcast with Baskin Wealth Management. I'm Barry Schwartz, President and Chief Investment Officer. In this podcast, we ignore all the noise and have conversations about the things that matter in today's markets. It's what we talk about with each other here in the office, and we want to share those conversations with you. Please stay tuned for our legal disclaimer at the end of the episode. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is May the 7th. Wow, time flies. We are so excited that you could join us today. We got a great show. Berkshire Hathaway General Meeting this year led by Greg Abel. I think Warren Buffett was in the audience, even asked a question.
It was a deep fake.
It was a deep fake. Okay, so we want to talk about annual general meeting. Ernest paid attention to it. We also want to talk about two of our largest holdings, Google and Apple. Both stocks are at all-time highs or near all-time highs as the AI trade continues. And we also have some things to talk about in terms of AI and how to play it going forward, given that it's been a one-way trade for a very long time. So before we get into that, let's get into this. If you like our podcast, of course, please subscribe to it on Apple, on Spotify, and on YouTube. We really appreciate all your five-star reviews as well as your comments. You can leave a four-star review too, but five stars are a lot better. If you have any interest in Baskin Wealth Management, we would love to talk to you about your portfolio. One of the things that separates Baskin Wealth Management from our competitors in the bank and brokerage world is there's only one layer of fees. Many of our competitors will charge you advisor fee as well as a fee to hold different products that they outsource. There's no outsourcing here. We do all our own research. We do all our own cooking. Ernest and I own all the stocks that the clients own, either individually or through a fund. And we'd love to share our ideas with you. We're very excited about a lot of our investments in our portfolio. We feel a lot of them are growing quite quickly and quite undervalued. And we feel now is our time. So if you have any questions and you want to talk to us more, we'd love to speak to you about your portfolio. So Ernest, I mentioned at the top, the AI trade. It seems that the earnings from, I guess first, the earnings from the S&P 500 have been unbelievable, but a lot of that has been driven by just a boom in AI, whether it's memory stocks or chip stocks. All of a sudden, these earnings are growing fantastically, so that's what's partly lifting the S&P 500. The other thing that's happening is adjacent companies, companies that are helping to provide data center equipment, building data centers, earth-moving equipment, fiber optics, you name it, those companies are also participating. Just so happens that the S&P 500 has some of those greatest companies in the world. The things that what makes us kind of concerned, of course, is some of those businesses. First of all, you're investing in the second derivative, so you really have to hope this AI trade continues to go as long as you want, a very, very long time at a high rate. Also, if things peak, you're paying a high multiple right now for industrial companies that could be quite cyclical and could suffer problems in other areas of their business. So no question, we're huge believers in AI. We have a number of Magnificent Seven companies as well as other companies that we believe will benefit from AI, but we're certainly never going to put the entirety of your portfolio into a one-way trade. And we've seen it before. Even if the fundamentals of a industry continue to work or grow, there's no guarantee that the stock prices work. We've seen that, of course, with software companies right now. So your take right now on this AI madness that we're seeing with the S&P 500.
So I think you have to really break it down rather than just kind of put everything that is tech as AI winner or AI loser. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the kind of the underlying performance of the various participants in the AI ecosystem, you have the picks and shovels today are the ones that are making the share prices are going up the most. Mm-hmm. So that would be like memory suppliers like Micron and SanDisk. They would be fiber optic cable providers like Corning. They would be like CPU chip providers like Intel. Mm-hmm. And those are the companies that are where their share prices are going up like 50, 100, 150% this year.
That's right. And even though there are actual earnings behind that, yeah, it's not like this is the .com where there's no, they're talking the talk, but there's nothing walking behind the talk. There are real profits there.
Right.
The problem is the valuations in some of those names are eye-popping.
Right. And it's interesting to contrast that with the performance of the hyperscalers. So being Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft, where they are the ones who are building the data centers and buying the chips. But for the most part, their share prices are not really... they're not really going up.
Yeah.
Right. So,
well, I mean, they're going up because their profits are going up, but they're certainly not going parabolic.
Right.
I mean, going parabolic is a good problem to have until the party ends, until, you know, someone says go, you know, that someone, you have to find a seat and the seat is occupied. And that can be very dangerous. So, for us, we always like to use caution when managing people's portfolios. We always to limit our risk. We think it's sensible to obviously own businesses that are growing and growing fast, but also to limit how big any one company or any one industry gets in someone's portfolio, because anything can happen. A perfect example is these software companies, right? Constellation Software, we all know that Baskin has a large stake in it. We love it. We love the company. We love the business. The stock has fallen 50%, even though the fundamentals continue to improve. So it's a conundrum. So anything can happen with any industry. Even AI stocks could fall 50%, even if the industry is still booming.
Right. I think one parallel to that would be companies like Airbnb and DoorDash and Uber, which went public during 2021, when those kinds of companies were all the craze.
Yeah.
And if you look at the performance of those companies since then, like they actually have grown quite substantially in revenues, profits, users, and they're gaining market share. But the share prices are still well below what they were in 2021.
That's right. Valuation, honestly, is the only thing that matters over the long term. No question, growth will save you. But, you know, predicting the future is extremely hard. And so, you know, it's easy to say, just buy me more AI. That's the only thing working. But just like last year when gold was the only thing working, things can reverse very, very quickly. And so, you know, we want to focus on owning companies that we think can grow their earnings at double digits over a 3 to 5 year period, but not paying an extreme multiple for them, and also not really getting caught up in buying a company that's doing well because the cycle is at a peak.
Yeah, and I think maybe just one last thought on this is that I think one of the most powerful ideas that Warren Buffett always had was that you can stick within your circle of competence, that you don't need to have an opinion on every single thing that is happening in the financial markets. So, for example, today, there's a lot of discussion on whether memory prices have peaked and how long can they continue to increase pricing. So, like, you know, we don't own any memory stocks. I've read some of the research on it, and I don't really have an opinion as to when memory prices will increase and whether the memory suppliers will ramp up production.
We all know at some point demand, supply catches up to demand, or there's innovation which changes the demand picture.
But like, you don't have to have an opinion on memory prices if you're not participating in those stocks.
That's right.
If you own a company that continues to grow profits, like they're doing the smart things and they're growing, like why do you need to worry about memory prices?
Yeah, I mean, it's because you see other people making money and you think, you know, it's just so easy. Why don't I just look at that? Stock's up, Micron's or SanDisk, they're up like 3,000%.
Right.
I can do that. I just buy it.
Right.
But there's more to it, because when you buy something, you also have to have a view of what it's worth, what you think it's going to be worth 3 to 5 years from now, what valuation would be worth 3 to 5 years from now, what the industry is going to look like. And just because the price has done well in the short term tells you nothing about what's going to happen in the long term. And we're certainly hopeful that's the case with some of our stocks that have underperformed in the short term, but still doing well in the long term. So as always, we're going to let fundamentals be our guide, not stock price action. And, you know, maybe the AI trade continues for many, many years. I actually believe that we are in the early innings of still building out AI. But I think a lot of these companies, the future is already reflected somewhat in their share price movements. The market's not stupid. It gravitates to the hot themes and what's profitable very, very quickly.
And we do have we are participating in that.
For sure.
In our portfolio, we own TSM, which is which makes the AI chips. We own the hyperscalers, which are the ones selling out compute capacity. And we own software companies.
That's right.
So those are the ones that are, I think, our belief is that in the end, a lot of the AI features that are rolled out are going to go through the software companies.
I think so, 100%. So I guess that's a perfect segue. We'll do our feature discussion on the Berkshire General Annual General Meeting, but it's a perfect segue to touch on Google and Apple earnings. So, you know, for clients that have been following along, we've owned Google and Apple since 2012, 2013, quite a long time. I can't, you know, you look at the share prices, you're like, wow, that's amazing. But I got to tell you, at every single year, at every some point in time, there were nervousness with holding those stocks. There was narrative changes. There were, they're behind, they're not innovating anymore, blah, 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 blah. So it's not easy to hold a stock for a very long period of time. But the reason what kept us around is these companies have billions of customers, trusted customers who love their products and can't live without them. And even if someone comes up with a better feature, product, innovation, it's not too hard for these companies like Google and Apple who have billions of customers to roll out a feature that or buy their competitor. So, and for the most part, since we've owned those stocks, they've never really been that crazily expensive.
Right. In multiples. Yes.
Right. On the multiples. So we've been always happy to buy and own them. You know, over the long term, we have trimmed some of their holdings because we're risk managers. We're wealth managers. We manage the entirety of people's portfolios. Rightly or wrongly, that's the strategy that one should use when you're protecting capital. So specifically talking about Google and Apple, both stocks hit all-time highs in April, May, or what have you. Fantastic earnings from both companies, strong guidance from both companies. Apple, of course, is focusing on the consumer side of the business. The demand for iPhones has been very, very strong. The turnaround in China has been unbelievable. This was a company a couple of years ago where you were going to say they're going to their China business was going to zero.
Yes.
And for Google, of course, the way it navigated its way to become an AI powerhouse is insane and unbelievable. Way behind in terms of its cloud business, but now seems to be the fastest grower providing AI infrastructure and cloud services. Ernest will get into that. And, you know, we're very excited to hold these companies and we're going to talk about what we see going forward.
Yeah, more interestingly, both were viewed as AI losers, like okay, not that long ago. I don't know if you remember that.
I think the good strategy, just always buy something that someone says is an AI loser and maybe hold on. That's probably the right strategy.
Maybe.
I
think what's interesting about both companies are a little bit different in terms of how they're approaching things. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting about Google is that I think compared to all the other hyperscalers, they have the most opportunity to make money themselves from AI and the spending on chips, mm-hmm, because they have the billions of users through Google Search. They've added things like AI Overviews and AI Mode, where those are increasing the amounts of ads that they can sell. And so
there's a call every time you run. Sorry to interrupt. Every time you run a AI something on Gemini, there's a call to action at the bottom, right?
Yeah.
It's I was looking today trying to find out something about wills.
Yeah.
And then on the AI mode, there's a call to action. Here, click on this and here's a provider that will do it for you.
Right.
Right. And so does ChatGPT offer that?
No. And so it's interesting to make that contrast, mm-hmm, because so when Google is investing in AI, they have their cloud business where they're selling computing to other companies, like model training, mm-hmm, AI models that are training their models. And they can also make money by selling ads through the various products that they have and using AI to improve the efficiency of the ads and those kinds of things. ChatGPT is purely a subscription product today where they make money by selling you a subscription to the latest models. They've tried to sell ads to monetize the 95% or whatever of users, mm-hmm, that don't pay for ChatGPT, mm-hmm, but it's been a struggle. Yeah. Whereas Google, they are in essence monetizing the 95% of users who are not wanting to pay for AI by selling ads through AI Overviews, AI Mode, and
regular and all those kinds of things. And regular search.
And so I think they're seeing a lot of good results from that. And that's one of the reasons why the stock has performed so
they're
well.
They're also not only providing AI, they're implementing AI for their own uses to improve their software, their offerings to businesses and consumers. It's just unbelievable.
And I think what's especially noticeable, not just for Google, but for basically all the hyperscalers, is that margins are going up despite all the amount of money that they're spending on AI. Mm-hmm.
And so explain why the margins are going up.
So when when they are spending on capital expenditures, that flows through the income statement as depreciation expense. Mm-hmm. And so for all of them, the depreciation expense is going through the roof because they've been building so many data centers. The fortunate thing about, or the good thing, the good news is that because revenue growth has been so strong, they are earning enough money to cover the amount that they're spending on data centers. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is one point of evidence that the amount of money that they're pouring into AI is generating good returns for the businesses.
You're also seeing it in the revenue growth and the acceleration of search results, YouTube. Right. So what we're trying to say there is not only are they monetizing this, but it's improving and adding to their business, right? So in so many ways, AI has been a boon to Google.
Yeah, so there's this narrative out there that all these big techs are kind of just chasing spending without regards for returns. They're blowing their brains out on a fad, but that's not supported by the financial results that they're reporting. Mm-hmm. Like they're reporting very strong profits. They're reporting like growing margins, and they're making money off it.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, of course, Google keeps reinvesting into their Waymo division, autonomous driving, as well as other areas. But let's talk for a moment about the cloud growth, because I think it's interesting. You mentioned, Ernest, to me that with Amazon and Microsoft, they're retaining their customers, but they're not winning the new customers who are launching AI-only businesses.
Right.
And so explain why and how Google is doing so great in that part of its business.
Yeah, so Google Cloud, which is the business that is selling to third parties, mm-hmm. they're growing faster than Microsoft and Amazon's cloud businesses. And so the reason for that is because, you know, a lot of the AI, new AI native companies, they want to use Google models. And so the best place to do that is at Google. Whereas for Microsoft and Amazon, if you kind of strip out the work that they do for Anthropic and OpenAI, mm-hmm. a lot of the growth in AI that they're seeing is really just kind of selling AI features to existing customers that are already using their software. Mm-hmm. So Google's execution on this front has been very, very good. And again, like another reason why the stock is doing well.
Yeah, so the stock is at an all-time high, of course. It's grown into our portfolio. You heard me mention before about risk management. You know, given the size of the stock, we will take a look at people's portfolios. And depending if it's gone too big, we'll have to take some action, right? It's just a methodical approach to risk management. Do we think Google is the best idea in the world and is going to be the greatest company going forward? Maybe.
Maybe.
But, you know, narratives change and things change.
Yes.
So you can't just be married to a stock just because you've done well and you've owned it for a long time and you have a lot of conviction. And so, you know, risk management to us is very, very important. You know, obviously balancing off how much capital gains we have to pay and where to make those decisions. It doesn't mean we don't like Google for the long term, but we may have other ideas in our portfolio that we want to build out, flesh out, that also may be trading at cheaper valuations, right? It's always fun to have a stock at an all-time high, but if it's at an all-time high at an all-time high valuation too, you may be eating into a lot of the future profits.
I think one last thing on AI is that what we're increasingly seeing is that companies that already have their existing user bases and the data from those customers, they are the ones who are really benefiting from AI. Mm-hmm. So one example being Google is creating a personal assistant that links together your photos and Gmail and, you know, like your Google Docs to create like a more useful personal assistant. Microsoft is, they have the enterprise data, like the small business data and the, like the Excels, the Words, the Outlooks, the Microsoft Teams.
Speaking of Microsoft, Ernest tweeted about how he loves using Copilot now for financial modeling.
Yeah.
And the CEO of Microsoft retweeted, actually commented on your tweet. So you became a little bit famous on FinTwit over the weekend.
Yeah. And so Microsoft is very naturally going to be the one who creates an AI agent that wraps all of this stuff together. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of enterprises, Baskin Wealth included, you're not going to allow some third-party AI to come in and just have access all of your sensitive customer data.
Are you crazy? Never.
So, and Apple is, that's kind of the thesis for Apple as well, which is that they already have the phone and the first-party data that's on the phone. And Amazon's doing that with your shopping data. Mm-hmm. And so that's another trend that I think will be more developed, more discussed going forward.
So Apple hit jackpot. The thesis was at some point in time, everybody's going to upgrade to the new iPhones.
Yeah.
The worry was, well, they don't have AI yet and there's no cool features or stunning features for AI. So no one's going to upgrade their phone. Market got it completely wrong. People upgraded their phone at record paces. China.
And that's even before they launched AI.
Even before, there's still real no AI, is there any AI app?
Apple Intelligence doesn't work.
No. So it's not at all intelligent whatsoever. And of course, Apple's probably going to use Google to help train and improve its Siri. At some point in time, I think we can all understand that Apple wants to run your life, right? It will be, your phone will be your, not only your window into what's going on in the world, but will also run your day, run your life, make your appointments, do everything for you.
Yeah.
In that sense.
So I think what Apple's bet is in the AI world is that at the end of the day, you won't really care what AI model you're using. What you will care is that you're able to use it on your devices and your hardware to do the things that you want to do. Mm-hmm. And so Apple will be the one that is kind of controlling and dictating how all of that plays out. Mm-hmm. And it's a very smart business decision in the sense that they don't have to spend money on building data centers and buying chips from NVIDIA. And also,
they can spend all their time researching and developing and coming out with new products and services instead of throwing billions and billions of dollars training learning language models.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the risk that people have discussed for Apple was that, well, maybe in an AI world, you won't need an iPhone anymore because you're just going to have an AI assistant just do everything for you without you having to tap on the apps on the phone, right? But it does seem to me that like OpenAI is working on a phone. So at least from OpenAI's perspective, it does seem like they don't think the form factor of the phone is going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something just so interesting about the personal device that you maintain in your hand. For sure, we all want our lives, we want shortcuts. We want things to be easier. That's why Ozempic is taking off.
Yeah.
Ernest and I talked today. There's a company called Planet Fitness that operates gyms. Stock is down like 30% because fewer people are going to the gym because it's easier just taking an Ozempic pill.
Right.
Right. And it works, right? So the bottom line with the Apple, it's kind of the same thing. You'll have these agents, they'll make your lives easier, but you also still want control of what you look at, how you operate, watching movies, playing games, having access to the world information. And it's hard to vision anything. Like they tried those goggles, they look ridiculous. The glasses, you know, the Meta glasses seem kind of gross if you wear them out in public. Right, you're always recording things.
It's
invasion of privacy. It's so it just seems that we're not going to come up with a better form factor than the personal phone.
Yeah, certainly hope that's true for Apple.
We do. So anything else you want to cover on Apple or Google?
No, they're like you said, they're two of our largest positions, and we expect them to own them for the long run.
Sounds good. So changing at the guard at we talked about it on our last podcast. Tim Cook stepping down, Reed Hastings stepping down. Obviously, the biggie, the one that we all follow here as investors, is Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
And Warren Buffett was not on the dais this year at the Berkshire Hathaway Annual General Meeting. Still retains most of his stock, right?
Yep.
But he's let other people run the show, namely Greg Abel, who's become the CEO. And how do you think Greg Abel did in terms of explaining his plans for Berkshire going forward?
Yeah, I thought it was good. So I think he kind of laid out exactly what investors wanted to hear from the next CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, which is that, number one, like the capital deployment strategy is not really going to change that much. They're going to be patient and wait for the big opportunity to come up. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like there's going to be a little bit more focus on operational improvements at the businesses rather than just, you know, we're a decentralized organization and we're just going to let the company do whatever they want.
Yeah, right? Kind of like Buffett's like, you know, we bought you. Send me the cash, I'll reinvest it. Yeah. We'll leave you alone.
Yeah.
Or Abel is, do everything Buffett told you, but I'm going to be watching your key operating metrics and trying to get you to improve. And enough is enough. I'm an operational guy. Whereas Buffett was more of a stock picker.
Right.
No question, Buffett is a genius, knows everything about business, but getting down to the nitty gritty of running huge industrial companies maybe wasn't his forte.
Right, and that's why I think when Greg was introducing the companies that are owned by Berkshire, I think there was a clear focus that on Geico, this is what's going on with Geico, and this is what we need to improve. Yeah. On BNSF, this is what's going on with BNSF, and this is what we're going to improve the business, right? And so
the three large areas for Berkshire are the Geico insurance, the Burlington Northern Railroad, which used to be a publicly traded railroad company. Berkshire bought it out, owns it outright. And then it's energy division.
They have a utilities division, and then they have a grab bag, which will be run in a separate division.
But the three main pillars are insurance, utilities, and railroad.
I would say insurance is really the core of all of it, right? It's just similar to Fairfax, as we talked about.
So if you look at the results over the last number of years, Berkshire's Geico has been losing market share. Burlington Northern, you can look at the operating metrics versus some of the U.S. and Canadian railroads, not as good.
Yeah.
And its utility division, I mean, there was some wildfires and insurance claims and legal stuff that kind of hurt the business in the short term. So a number of their businesses have been challenged by structural or cyclical things at the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I think part of the message that I think he wanted to get across was that, like, you know, we haven't been performing that well at some of these divisions and we are working on that and we have the people in place to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And so, if you look at the structure of the meeting, there was no Warren Buffett. Like, Warren Buffett was kind of sitting in the front row.
Yeah.
But he brought up in the morning session, there was Ajit, who was running the insurance operation. Mm-hmm. In the afternoon, he was sitting with the CEO of BNSF and Adam, who was the CEO of NetJets and all the retailing businesses. And I think that the goal of that was just to kind of highlight that at Berkshire, it's not just one guy. It's a whole team of people who are world-class at what they're doing and really know what they're trying to accomplish.
So the natural question people will say is, okay, I bought Berkshire Hathaway for Warren Buffett. He's the GOAT, the best of all time. Not only was he the smartest capital allocator, he was an amazing stock picker, buying concentrated positions at really depressed prices of some of the world's best franchises and never selling a share, right? Yeah. That Greg Abel, he doesn't pick stocks.
Right.
So what's going to happen there? Is Berkshire going to maybe become a company that just buys the S&P 500 indexes?
Yeah.
Does Greg Abel have the chops to to be an operational guy as well as run a, how big is the investment portfolio? $200 billion.
Yeah, right now it's $288 billion.
That's no joke.
Of stocks.
Of stocks, yeah.
Plus about $400 billion of cash.
Yeah. So, do you think that? And I guess that's partly why the stock has been depressed. Do you think? So Greg Abel has a, you know, he's got big shoes to fill there.
Yeah, I do think that Berkshire going forward is less going to be about, you know, picking Domino's Pizza versus like Papa John's stock, and more about, at least from a stock perspective, being a liquidity provider in bad times. Mm-hmm. And so Berkshire has always kind of already been going towards that direction, where, like, if you remember back to 08, they were able to lend money to Goldman Sachs at a very, very attractive, they bought preferred shares from Goldman Sachs and they got warrants.
Other banks too.
Yeah, and other banks too. Mm-hmm. And so being able to use their cash and provide that to people who want it at attractive rates when they want it. And so that's why I spent time talking about they're going to wait and be patient and opportunistic, right? Rather than saying like, oh, I'm going to, you know, today I'm going to buy this stock and tomorrow I'm going
to
buy that stock.
And there's nothing pressuring Berkshire to invest that cash because they're getting 5% on T-bills right now.
Right.
Which is, okay, 5%, whoop-de-doo, but it's still one of the highest yields that in years, right? And risk-free.
Right.
Inflation protected, no, but risk-free.
And then I think one of the things that he really tried to emphasize was that they do have a lot of opportunities, not just in stocks. So one of the beauties of Berkshire's conglomerate model is that they can deploy capital into whatever area they find attractive. So if they find attractive opportunities to write insurance, they're going to put capital there. Mm-hmm. If they see opportunities to make outright acquisitions, such as the rat poison company they just did, Bell Labs, they're going to do that.
Like for real rat poison?
Yeah, actually rat poison.
Yeah, I mean, that's now in the headlines, of course, with this Hanta virus on cruise ships.
Yeah. If they have opportunities to reinvest in their own businesses, mm-hmm. such as buying new planes for NetJets or whatever, they're going to do that. So stock picking is just one out of many opportunities that Berkshire has to deploy capital.
But the size of the capital and the size of the company is now so big. Berkshire is now a $1 trillion company. Yeah. Making a $5 or $10 billion deal doesn't move the needle. It's like it's a fart in the wind. You don't remember it.
Right.
So, and there's, now that you're so big, you can't just go out. Was there any talk about the strategy of putting that cash to work, or they're just going to remain patient and wait for opportunities?
No, it's just remaining patient because. Mm-hmm. Again, by definition, you don't know when these things are going to pop up.
That's right. Right. So they're agnostic as to whether to make an investment in the business, buy a company outright, make an investment, a permanent investment in an equity. It just depends on what offers the best risk reward going forward.
Right.
Okay. Very, very cool. So Tom.
No, and I think from an investor perspective, what that means is that maybe in times when, like such as today, when like memory stocks and AI stocks are going to the moon, like they may underperform the S&P 500.
For sure.
But what especially is what I find especially comforting, especially given our investment style and the types of clients that we have, is that they're really focused on downside protection. And if there's a terrible 2008 style event, God forbid, like they're going to really benefit from that because they have the cash to really quickly move and deploy it as needed.
And they're so disciplined. You and I were talking about the cybersecurity insurance.
Right.
Right. So the risks are so open-ended. We saw this news about Anthropic having some kind of model that has found flaws in every single software company.
Yes.
And could lead to incalculable risks for that software. So like Berkshire is saying, we're not going to write that insurance unless we're getting paid a ton of money.
Yeah, I think they Berkshire and Ajit has always been very cautious about the whole cyberspace because I think from an actuarial perspective, it was kind of difficult for them to grasp how big the losses could potentially become. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that it's been a competitive space, like the premiums are not good are not high. Yeah. And so, as with everything, they're going to be patient. Not to say that they'll never do cyber, but should the opportunity arises, maybe there's a major cybersecurity event in the world, mm-hmm. premiums are going to spike, and maybe that's when they'll get into it.
So let's talk about a couple things before we finish off with the general meeting. Abel did talk about AI a number of times.
Yeah.
And the share buybacks at Berkshire. Big splashy headline where Abel said, I'm going to use my salary every year to buy shares, and we're restarting the share buyback, right?
Right.
When the actual results came out, Berkshire bought barely any shares.
Right.
Right. So, like, what's going on? You're telling us you're going to buy shares. The shares are the lowest price in a while. The valuation is depressed. The results are improving, but you didn't buy back any stock.
Well, maybe he doesn't think it's that cheap.
Maybe he doesn't think it's that cheap. Okay.
Yeah. No, he said, I think that is something that's been brought up, and kind of gave like the normal Buffett answer, like, we'll buy it when we think the shares are trading below intrinsic value, whatever that means.
Whatever that means. Yeah.
And so, I think you just have to wait for it to happen.
And talk about AI. Of course, you can't have AI without electricity,
right?
Without energy,
right?
Right. It's you know we're talking about shooting data centers into space to
right.
benefit from the cool of the atmosphere and the heat of the sun, right? But at the moment, we're still earthbound. And doesn't Berkshire own one of the largest electricity companies in North America? Yeah.
Yeah, they're a big utility player. Mm-hmm. And I think they have been pretty consistent in their position here, where they will support the growth of these data centers, but not at the expense of higher rates for consumers. Mm-hmm. Because I think in the end of the day, like if you're like these are highly regulated entities, and what if you're a regulated entity and you're talking to elected officials, what people really care about is not having high electricity prices.
That's right. My son's having a 12-hour conversation with ChatGPT. All I want to do is plug in my car and make sure it can
right.
and run, and I don't want to overpay, right? So there's some silliness that is going on with the spending on AI. We've seen it over the last couple of years where people are, you know, investing in videos and just craziness
yeah.
that is not really adding to society and just using up all the compute power right. for nonsense.
Right. Yeah, so I think for utilities, it's going to be an area where, yeah, the utilities are a necessary part of AI, providing electricity to them. In terms of how much money exactly they're going to make from it and how much capital they actually deploy mm-hmm. to generate that, to generate those profits, like I think that's a little bit harder to evaluate, right?
So what are you going to be, what are the key things that you're going to be watching for under Greg Abel's tutelage over the next number of years? What operating metrics, what are you looking for? Are you looking for improvements in BNSF, those type of operations? Like what would make you say, this guy's got it?
Yeah, so I think there was one question where somebody asked, like, are you going to ever like sell stuff at Berkshire? Like, is this forever owning assets thing still going on?
Yeah.
And he said, like he was kind of like surprisingly open to the idea that he might sell underperforming assets at Berkshire. Mm-hmm. So like they did that with one of the utility divisions that was losing money. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, like for sure. Like if there's something within our portfolio where like it's not doing well, maybe it's losing money and we feel like it could do better with another ownership, they will certainly do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than smart capital allocation combined with a growing business
right.
where they're improving profit margins. I mean, if that happens, Berkshire will trade at quite a high premium, the book value, versus where it is today.
And I think somebody made a pretty shrewd observation about Berkshire, which is that it is actually kind of, in some sense, the anti-AI trade, mm-hmm. right? Because if you look at what it is, it's railroad as utility, kind of some old school manufacturing businesses.
Travel centers, yeah, gas stations, yeah.
They have insurance, they mm-hmm. have a large position in Apple and Coca-Cola
yeah, yeah.
And American Express. And that's like, even Apple, like they are the ones who are they're the big tech, as we mentioned, that is not spending on AI, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And they have all this cash waiting for like if and when this whole thing begins to blow up. They're going to provide capital. So like Berkshire has positioned itself in that way. And I think there's a lot of, even excluding what you think about like the prospects of BNSF and Greg Abel's stock picking abilities, like there is value in adding something like that to your portfolio.
100%. I think you said it clearly. We're portfolio managers. We're wealth managers. What we're trying to do in people's portfolios is not make a one-way bet on any one theme. We're trying to own the best capital allocators and own smart companies at reasonable prices. And at some point in time, the flavor of the month gets discontinued. And I don't think Berkshire, if the results start to improve, the operating results, capital allocation continues to be smart, they start buying back more stock, still compounding at high rates, it could easily rocket higher even if the market sells off or gets worried about AI.
Right.
So those are things to think about. If everything in your portfolio is going up at the same time, at the same day, every day, you're not diversified. Trust me, it may feel really good today, but when the poop hits the fan, it won't be fun. So thank you so much for joining us today. And we appreciate all our listeners and our viewers. And we'll see you back here real soon. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and any forecasts on the economy, markets, or individual securities should not be viewed as investment advice, a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Clients of Baskin Wealth Management and the speakers on this podcast may own shares of the companies discussed. Information on this podcast is current as of the time of production and is subject to change. If you have any questions or would like to subscribe to these podcasts, visit our website at baskinwealth.com.